Hello, team Woolshift Dust. Alicia here. And is it getting hot in here, or is it just Juliet's arm infection fever? But really, I think season two action's really heating up this episode. What do you think, Luke?
Yeah, definitely. This felt very much like a mid-season episode, like it's setting everything up for the finale.
Mm.
A lot of pieces are being moved into place.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah, but in an exciting way, I think, right?
Yes, yes.
Like moving into place.
And if anything happens to Shroxy, I'm going to write a strongly worded review on Rotten Tomatoes. I just want one couple to make it through this show.
Oh, we're definitely going to get into that. And I'm going to ask you to kill your darlings on that front too.
Okay.
Well, Luke and I are going to make sure that you at home didn't miss anything important in all the action of Barricades, the sixth episode of Silo Season 2 on Apple TV+. Luke, before we get into our thoughts on the episode, can you remind everyone of our spoiler policy?
So Alicia has read all the books that go to comprise the series Silo. I haven't read any of them. So we will not be discussing anything in the books that happens after season 2, episode 6. We will be talking about things that happen in the book, either in season 1 or in the first 6 episodes of season 2.
Right. So obviously spoilers for this episode and every episode that's aired before it. No spoilers ahead. We have not watched ahead of the episode that we're talking about now. And Luke, again, is representing the non-readers so that we make sure that we respect your policy on that. So, Luke, I got a comment today that I wanted to bring up with you. Might as well do it on air. I was asked if we could not bring up trailer spoilers during the main episode.
Fine by me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay. I think if we have any trailer spoilers, we can save it to the end.
Yeah.
Although I don't see any of this episode per se, but yeah.
No, I don't think so.
But yeah, they're changing a lot in the show, as always. They're adding new characters and new plot lines and things like that. So I'm often just as clueless as non-readers. But for those of you who do want to know what book spoilery stuff I am holding back, I save that for the book club spoiler casts. This week's topic is going to be the Wool Rebellion. So this is something even show only fans can see. The situation's getting explosive in Silo 18. Abby and I and the book club spoiler cast are going to compare what we see happening on the screen with what happened in the books, and combining what we know from both versions, we're going to try to lay out what we expect to happen from here and who's likely not to make it out alive, including the whys and hows all that happens. So stick around at the end for more on the book club and how you can join if you're not a member. But no future book spoilers for now, as we break down Season 2, Episode 6, Barricades.
Your regularly scheduled breakdown will begin in 3, 2, 1.
So, Barricades is the title. I guess, you know, that's literal. We see a barricade go up. I guess metaphorical, too?
I guess metaphorical, but mostly literal.
Yeah, well, I always think that, like, you know, we had dissent the other week. I think that they do intentionally choose these words that are metaphorical and literal at the same time. That's my interpretation. Episode 6 aired Thursday or Friday, December 19th or 20th, depending on where you live in the world, 2024. And the writer was Jeffrey Wang. And he was a staff writer in season 1. And he was credited in season 1 for episode 8, Hannah, which is the one where Luke and I got all personal over Martha's agoraphobia. And he was bumped up to an executive story editor this season. So he's deep in this show and its story. And the director this week was, again, Michael Dinner, who has been the director for most of the episodes this season. What were your overall thoughts on the episode, Luke?
I really liked it. It was a very dynamic episode. There was a lot happening. It was, like I say, it felt like it was an episode that was setting up a lot of storylines to come in the remaining five episodes. Four episodes, 10. I really liked the storyline with Shirley and Knox, or Shroxy, as I'm taken to calling them. And there was one absolute WTF moment in the episode that had my jaw on the floor, but we'll get to it.
Well, what was that? We're past the spoiler point.
It was Lucas being made Shadow. I did not see that coming.
Doing a victory lap as a book reader.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I take it from your reaction that is in the book.
Yeah, so here's my reaction to the episode. I'm just going to read out the text that I sent to Luke as I was watching this episode. I said, okay, Kathleen is winning me over, smiley face. I should have been filming a reaction video of me watching Bernard's conversation with Camille. They mentioned Danny again, but where is he? Crying emoji. I knew there were Sherlock's vibes. Kiss, kiss. And then I send a screenshot of Bernard saying, Lucas Kyle, I'm electing you to be my shadow. And I wrote, fucking finally! I'm so sick of book readers crying about this, LOL. Were you surprised? You said, yeah, really did not see that coming. I said, yay. And I said the episode made me tear up a few times, like with Martha and Pete. And you said Bernard and Mary got you.
Yeah.
And you had to remind yourself he actually killed her.
It's an episode with a lot of emotional weight behind it. But yeah, as a non-book reader, I did not see Lucas becoming Bernard. Like, if you'd given me 100 guesses for a plot twist, that would not have been one of the guesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've definitely buried it more this time. And I also, like, in the book version, he's a family friend. So there's, like, that connection also. But it does come down to the same thing where it's, like, a desperate moment. It's like, you know, you're smart and good with computers. But I kind of like how this time, in this version, I think it was a good thing where they made it, like, Bernard's like, you can fix this thing for me. You know, your brain works, like, Meadows says your brain works real good. And I see what you're doing with, you know, this more and more advanced programming. And he realized he was only holding him back by not giving him access to all the information.
And also, I do like when Sims bursts into Bernard's office.
Like, oh, yeah.
What are you doing here? You're supposed to be in the mines.
Wait till he finds out.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, well, we're going to talk through the episode one arc at a time. We're going to mostly be talking about everything going on in 18. It's kind of mostly all part of one story this week, but there will be parts that we talk about out of the order of in which the scenes aired. So just follow along. We're just trying to keep story arcs together. All right. So we begin with a hunger for justice. We open on Down Deepers gathering at the barricade on 130, constructed in the last episode, now restored and well guarded. They chant, let them through, at the raiders, who are holding back all of their deliveries from the rest of the silo, including food. Meanwhile, Shirley, Remy Milner, tends to the injury on Knox's, Shane McRae's, back, where he was whipped from the descender cable after Amundsen cut it last episode. They bicker flirtily in Martha's, Harriet Walters, workshop while she tries to concentrate on her work. She's upset that Carla was arrested last episode. Knox says they'll get her back, but her status as head of supply should protect her. Martha says the only status they've assigned to them all now is enemy. She points out that Sheriff Billings is down there, allegedly looking for them, but Martha's staying put in her workshop and he can find her there as far as she's concerned. So, yeah, I totally called it with the chemistry between.
Yeah, you did.
It's fire between them.
And like Martha knows what's going on. Martha knows the score, and she's just not at all interested.
It struck me as like a parent, like who's, because she kind of was a parent to them, and she knew them since they were young. So she's like, yeah. Oh, the teenagers are flirting and doing their thing, and
yeah,
bickering and
yeah,
play fighting.
But also, like this episode, it struck me this episode would have been a really fun episode to be an extra on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the chanting and the running and the
yeah,
it'd be a really good episode to have been an extra on.
Yeah, that's true. So by the way, from the book perspective, I just have to point out that I think that this means this, what did you call them?
Shoxi.
Shoxi confirms what I suspected, is that there's a book character, Mark with a CK, who is Shirley's husband in the book, who isn't in the show. So now I think they might be blending those two characters together, which is something I suspected might be the case. Abby and I will talk through in the spoiler cast about what that might mean for Nox's character arc. So Nox and Shirley visit the metal fabrication workshop run by Mark without a C, played by George Robinson. And in episode 2, we saw Nox ask Mark for weapons for only them and no one else. And now there's a table full of glorified pipes and primitive firearms waiting for them. I did find it interesting that Shirley doesn't already know Mark. So I guess when Mark said in the last time we saw him that he got out of somewhere, I guess that wasn't mechanical.
No. I'm thinking possibly the mines.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm thinking that maybe his wheelchair use might be as a result of some kind of injury sustained.
Could
in
be.
In the mines, possibly.
Could be, yeah. Yeah, and we'll find out what Nox's second secret request from Mark was later in this episode.
Well, now, hang on. Don't we have them both? It's not to make weapons for anybody else. Uh-huh. It's to make weapons for him.
Right, but then the second request was that cement saw.
Oh, okay.
I think yeah, so. Okay. Or maybe, yeah. Anyway, he gets a cement saw later, too. We'll get back to that.
Yeah, we'll get back to that.
So, meanwhile, Teddy Olatunji Ofe, whose eye is healing nicely after the police brutality surrounding his arrest for graffiti, he rushes into the workshop to tell them that about the deliveries being blocked, and there's something else. The food they already have has been covered with rat poison. And first of all, how did Teddy know to find them in the workshop? Like, Teddy's like freaking everywhere this season.
it's true. Presumably.
Is he a spy? Is he the one who poisoned the food? No, can't be.
No, I don't think so. I think it's if you're asking me who it is, I think it's the doctor. The doctor that made a very convenient escape.
To the mids.
I'm assuming Teddy just went by Nox's flat, went by Shirley's flat. Found out they weren't there and asked somebody where they right. were.
But how does anyone, it doesn't really matter. Teddy does seem to be very like on the ball. Like he's very eager. He's an eager beaver. The plan of Bernard and Co. is to starve them out. Are you worried that this is going to turn into a siege situation?
By the end of the episode,
things change.
The things have shifted. So I'm not too concerned by that. But it's a pretty ruthless strategy from Bernard because, you know, that's going to affect everybody in the Down Deep. That, you know, people who are involved in this rebellion and not involved in this right. rebellion. And like, you can't wipe out everybody in the Down Deep because who's going to pass on the knowledge of how the silo works?
Right.
Of how, you know, the generator and everything works. So
like Diego's aunt.
Yeah, Diego's aunt on 135. So, yeah, it's a very aggressive strategy on Bernard's part. And the one thing about the rat poison is, it does mean there is the possibility of the raiders. We already know that there are listeners, that the raiders have a sort of intelligence network in the Down Deep. But this might mean that there is one of those listeners who's prepared to, you know, go a bit further than just passively spying on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I do wonder. That's got to become a plot point at some point, who the traitor yes. is down there. Yeah. I had to laugh, though, at Nox's reaction when he realizes, like, because he takes it, he's like, what's on that lettuce? And he's, like, rubbing his fingers on it. And she's like, rat poison. And he's like, ew.
Yeah.
Drops it. It's like
wiping his hand on his trousers. Yeah.
Don't do that. Wash your hands. Wash your clothes.
Yeah.
Spreading it. But yeah, meanwhile, up in the janitor's closet surveillance room, new head of judicial security, Amundsen, Christian Ochoa, stands with Bernard, Tim Robbins, overseeing the watchers looking for Nox and Shirley. Bernard reiterates his goal of using order to prevent chaos as he watches the hungry people of the Down Deep protest the people withholding their food. Patient Patrick, meanwhile, Sheriff Billings, Chinoza Uche, and Down Deep Deputy Hank, Billy Postlethwaite, have managed to secure the Down Deep doctor's young shadow, Felix, Zheng Ji Yong to tend to Patrick Kennedy, Rick Gomez, who was shot in the shoulder. Felix nervously sets up to dig the bullet out with a comically large forceps, but he doesn't have any pain drugs for Patrick stronger than aspirin, and Patrick demands the attention of a full doctor with access to actual medicine before he'll talk and tell Billings and Hank what he knows. So, yeah, I do think last week they said that the Down Deep doctor was the worst one, and it sounds like this kid probably hasn't had the best training.
Yeah, and like I say, I think it is convenient timing that the Down Deep doctor has mm-hmm. suddenly decided to go and visit family in the Mids.
Oh, right, yeah, and that he was allowed to.
Been poisoned, and that he was allowed to, yeah.
Yeah, Doc Fellon, he's our enemy.
I do love Patrick's line. If, are you forgetting something? You've got to give me drugs! Lots yeah. of drugs! Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... Yeah, I wouldn't trust Felix to get a bullet out. I wouldn't trust Felix to get a bullet out of my shoulder.
No, he'd had like the wrong forceps. It looked like bad news. Patrick was right in that. But I do. This is the second time they've mentioned this Doc Fellon or however it's pronounced. So I do love Patrick stops him by saying, "Hold on a rat fucking second."
You started shaving yet?
Yeah, I just think rats are mentioned a lot in the books also, so I like that they've been incorporating them into the slang in the okay. show as well. All right, so we cut to Hank and Paul back in the Down Deep Deputy Station. Billings is sending a message to his wife, Kathleen, Caitlin Zaws, asking her to get a doctor to bring down in an unofficial capacity. He tells her to stay behind because it's not safe for her and the baby. Hank asks him if he really plans to arrest Knox, Shirley, and Walker. Paul doesn't seem too interested in the idea. He gives some lip service to the pact, but he knows Hank doesn't think they're guilty. He says if they're such great people, they'll turn themselves in. I love that when Paul messages his wife, he says, "Need a doctor," and then immediately, "Not for me," because of course that's going to be her first worry.
Yeah, they are such a cute couple. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And we'll come back to the state of Paul Billings' health later on, because there are some interesting developments on that front.
And I have to say, Stu, Duve71, said earlier in the season that that Hank was becoming a bit of a company man, and he did sound a bit of a company man here. He says at one point to Billings, "Doesn't matter what I think, I swore an oath." Like, oh, ick, I don't know about that.
I'm not sure that he meant that. I think he was trying maybe to reassure Billings.
Like, it's like Billings, you know, "I swore an oath to," like Billings says at the end, you know, I'm protecting the law. I'm not protecting any particular person. But yeah, they really have to look very hard away to not know where Knox and Shirley are, because they are currently standing on a table in the Down Deep cafeteria giving speeches and talking to the crowd.
This is the thing. If they were desperate to arrest Knox and Shirley, they would have done it. But
if they cared the least little bit.
Yes.
First of all, where's the first place you would look? Martha's place.
Yeah, where's the second place you would look? The cafeteria.
Well, yeah, if they're like yelling in the middle of the cafeteria, that's hard to miss. You really have to try. But yeah, they're telling the crowd that they've been framed. They did not kill Judge Meadows. They blame Bernard Holland and Robert Sims. Common. There's discontent in the crowd, though, because the blockade ends if Knox and Shirley are turned in. But Martha stands up and says Bernard and Sims have already won because they're turning mechanical against their own. She reminds them that this is life or death. Her speech rouses a portion of the crowd, but a louder portion is yelling about not wanting to starve. Just then, Teddy rolls in a trolley full of food with compliments from their farmer friends on level 122, delivered via the recycling chutes. So it says, the note says, "To our friends in Mechanical, thank you for always keeping the power on," and they signed it, "Juliet Lives."
I mean, this is another reason why I think the whole idea of the order of turning the rest of the silo against Mechanical doesn't really make sense, because people know that Mechanical keep the lights on, that they keep the water flowing, that they you know, probably manage the waste disposal, that, you know, all of these things. Is very immediate that if you turn on these people, they're not, that none of that is going to happen.
Right.
And so we've talked about this in previous episodes. I just don't think what the... Leaving aside the morality of what the Order says, I just don't think it's practical.
I think, yeah, there is also... The show emphasizes a lot the how people at the top can become disconnected. Like we heard Bernard say, what was that last episode or the episode before? He's making coffee in the Sims apartment. He's like, you know, I used to admire how John's made her own coffee. I'm like, she made her own coffee to stay close to the people.
Also, I love your posh accent there, Alicia.
Yeah, but we definitely have had like a full arc going on with Knox and Shirley because we started the season with him standing on the table alone, yelling at her on the floor. And now they're standing there together, yelling at everybody else. The two of them.
It was a very
against the world.
It was a very I Spartacus-y kind of episode. There's a lot of shouting and yelling and, you know, hands in the air kind of moment.
Well, but they were all against them at this point.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. But it's interesting. Nobody wants to turn on Martha. No one wants to turn Martha in. They're like, no, not you. Just the two of them. Like,
I'm going to say, well, she's like the grandma. She's the grandma of the entire Down Deep, as far as I can tell.
It's also like very clear. Like there's something weird about like Martha's like, okay, so Carla was arrested. They're after these two. Like I should be on the list too because I was with the three of them.
Yeah.
But it's also just clear that like Bernard has zero interest in pursuing her. Billings has zero interest in pursuing her the entire episode. Nobody wants to arrest Martha. And she's like, okay, well, I'm here if anyone does want to arrest me.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but it's a good point. Like Bernard in particular, like you say, puts no emphasis on Martha. And I wonder why. That's a really good point.
I feel like there's some, I don't know, protective vibe. But then again, he ordered a hit on Johns, and I think he felt the same way. And, well, he killed...
did he? I mean, we don't know that.
We don't know the details. We don't know the details. It could have been Sims without him, but I think we can assume.
No, I'm not sure.
He was willing to kill his own love, to kill Mary, so...
Yeah, but just because you're willing to... Just because you're willing to commit one cold-blooded murder doesn't mean you're willing to...
I mean, I think he's committed a number of them. But
yeah, okay. I think it's probably safe to say he's committed a number at this point.
All right. Well, so Amundsen says no more trash stash. He reports to Bernard about people sending foods and mechanical down the trash chutes. And Bernard was apparently expecting this, but he says it's ahead of schedule, accelerating the timeline of planned events. And he tells Amundsen to post raiders at every chute access point. The plan to starve them is still on. So if he wants to starve them out, why do you think the help from the allies is like a phase? Is that help from the allies phase is part of the plan?
Why wouldn't you just like block the chutes to begin with? And also, why wouldn't you deliver food using the chutes normally? That seems way more efficient than like having a whole bunch of port, because also like you wouldn't be able to get like the stairs aren't wide enough for you to get wagons down them, so like how many porters do you need to deliver food back and forth on a daily basis to the Down Deep or indeed anywhere that's not a farm? Like surely using the chutes would just be a more efficient way of distributing food to begin with.
Yeah, but we saw what was his name like Calvin or something who the supply guy. He's, you know, as he laid out, and this is very much a thing from the books, the porters are very territorial about their work. They want to keep employed, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, there must be, like, there's a population of 10,000 in the silo. Like, there must be hundreds of porters. If you just think about, like, the amount of people it would take to carry food, let alone anything else. Like, they may be the single largest department within the silo, if that's the way it's got to work.
I mean, yeah, there are definitely a lot of porters, yeah. By the way, I just want to note that Diego Avias, Aki Kotabe, he's eyeballing the conversation again between Amundsen and Bernard from his watcher post. So I'm wondering if we should rename him to Diego Looky Lou this season. He's not doing any exposition anymore.
Well, no, his full name is Diego Lucky Liu, obvious. Like.
Well, I think the obvious moniker I'm going to give to someone else later. All right, so we get to the part where Kathleen wins me over. She supports her man, period. Kathleen has been asked by her husband to procure a doctor and send them to the Down Deep, to the Down Deep deputy station, but in an unofficial capacity, which could be a daunting challenge, but Kathleen has a can-do attitude and a connection she made with an excellent doctor just last week, Dr. Daddy Peter Nichols, played by Ian Glynn. Dr. Nichols is living in his rebel era, so he's happy to go along with some questionable but assuredly morally upright doctoring. So he goes with Kathleen, who's decided to ignore her husband's instructions to stay behind. By the way, I just had to laugh. Baby Claire, I'm like, I recall her being bigger than that lump that Kathleen's always hugging to her chest. And it's always, I love how like quiet and long that baby sleeps. She's a very quiet baby.
Yeah. And it's like, it's, there's one shot where it's obvious that there's nothing in that papoose. Right. It's just the way they've folded it. There is clearly nothing.
Well, I think there's a baby doll in there. Yeah.
There might be a doll. Yeah. But there certainly isn't a child.
No.
It might be dangerous.
Caitlin Zaz, she sells it with like her constant bouncing and rocking of the bundle and stuff.
Yeah, you know? She does.
She does her job. When they get to the barrier on 1:30, though, Dr. Nichols flashes his badge and says he was called down for a medical emergency, but the judicial guard dogs aren't having it. So Kathleen steps up and throws out a, "My husband is the sheriff," and starts describing C-sections, which is probably the only thing men want to hear about less than periods. And so they let the two of them and the baby through, warning them they might not be able to get back. I love Kathleen. She cites section 12 of subsection 6 of the pact, but unlike her husband, I'm pretty sure she was just bullshitting that.
Yeah, I was wondering that. Is she making that up in that moment?
It or looks like just, she was.
Did it just take her a moment to remember, like, mm-hmm. what it was? Because, like, the thing she cites, like, denying a citizen life-saving right. medical treatment, that sounds like the kind of thing that ought to be in the pact.
I'm sure it is somewhere, but I don't think she has it memorized the way her husband does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also find it interesting, you know, when we were saying who could be the doctor for Patrick, I brought up Dr. Nichols, and I said, you know, he might want to help the man who helped his daughter, but he doesn't even know that, even by the end of this. He's just doing this because he's a good guy.
Yep, just trying to restore a bit of professional pride.
True. Yeah, he's redeeming himself. Yeah. So Billings is surprised to see his wife show up with Dr. Nichols in the Down Deep, but she's here to nurse if he would kindly hold the baby. Dr. Nichols removes the bullet with the help of some proper painkillers and sews Patrick back up. And now Paul wants Patrick to hold up his end of the deal and tell him what he knows about what's going on in the silo. Patrick decides to play coy, though, and Billings does not find it cute. He eventually hands the baby back to his wife and sends everyone else out of the room so he can do a little closer questioning. He threatens to tell Sims where Kennedy is, and Kennedy stops playing. And Kennedy stops playing his game, saying Billings isn't going to be happy to learn what he has to say. So we get the Kennedy attitude. Oopsie, looks like I made Daddy mad. And Billings is like, not really. I just didn't expect much from you. And he slams that chair down.
Yeah, like, you're doing your best, Paul, but Billings is just not a very intimidating character. He's not got the Sims.
I don't know. I think he flipped a switch there.
Yeah,
I think not Sims. He shouldn't be Sims, but I think he flipped a switch there where it was, because remember, this is also the guy who told us the story about how another teenager said that, look, we both have the syndrome. And he's like, no, I don't. And beat the kid up.
Also, whoops, I make Daddy mad is pretty good, but nothing's going to beat Holston Jr. from season one.
But he does, he says a very memorable line here where he says, you're not going to be happy to hear what I have to say. It'll ruin your fucking life. And it's like, you know what? It's true. It is going to ruin his life, but his life's about to be ruined regardless. Everyone's lives are. Well, it's just a situation of the silo. So Patrick tells Patrick tells Billings about the green video Juliet flashed, about being gagged and bagged. He says the green video was like the page from the guide that Billings showed him, the picture of the mountains, but a million times more beautiful, indescribable. He tells Billings Sims came to him to make a deal, 22 years of forgetting for a firebombing. And then he asks Billings if some small part of him wouldn't rather not know all of that. Patrick admits that he didn't think the forget drugs were real, but he had a hood over his head and not a whole lot of options. And I'm like, you know what? I accept that explanation.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah. Although, like, what if he had gone down there, like, yeah, I'll do your firebomb thing, and he hid out down there instead? Or maybe he's just afraid to, like, bring the heat on his niece.
Yeah, I think he's probably afraid to bring the heat on his knees. And also, like, if he tried to hide out and it had gone wrong, given the firebombing and given the atmosphere, there's a decent chance he would have been ripped limb from limb by the Down Deepers. So probably not a good idea.
Well, they would have had no reason to rip him limb by limb if he didn't do the firebomb.
That's true, but...
Well,
yeah, like I said, hiding in the silo is really difficult because you can hide, but you can't run. Like, there's nowhere for you to go. Ultimately, you will be caught. Ultimately, if the raiders are determined enough, they will find you because there are only so many places to hide.
Yeah. And yeah, so we find out that when Juliet flashed the green on the computers, they told everyone the computers went dark because of a system reboot, but it's still unclear if anyone outside the janitor's closet actually saw that flash of green or not.
But it did come up like for a split second, and it was a split second on the screens in the cafeteria. We saw that in...
Did we?
I think so. We saw that.
That was in the first season, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, but I mean, when Juliet showed it at the end of the season, rather than there was a flash earlier in the season.
I think I'd have to go back and rewatch it, but I think...
No, yeah, because I was toward the beginning of the season when that happened.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, yeah, still causes problems, because why? How would that happen? How would it flash in the cafeteria unless, you know... They should have done it when Juliet did it, but anyway, I guess they were just trying to, like, create a mystery. But yeah, this is so Patrick mentions my friend Danny again. So Danny's getting mentioned every freaking episode, but where is he? He says, he's who knows what they did to him? I don't know. Who knows what the hell they did to him?
He's sitting in a room somewhere with a bag over his head going, oh.
Or maybe he's already in the mines, or I don't know.
Maybe he's already in the mines.
If they're doing all of this just to tell me he's dead in the finale or something, I'm going to be pissed. Why? Where are you holding Danny? Let Danny go.
You've already got Lucas. You can't ask for Danny as well.
Well, they invented Danny. Now they have to keep him in play.
Okay.
I always knew Lucas was going to come step into the role he stepped here. It just took a while. No. I also love Patrick calls the Down Deep Grease Town. So maybe we should. I'm confused about whether it's mechanical or engineering or whatever. It's just Grease Town.
I'm gonna say to Patrick, like, you are just the guy. You're the odd job man. So maybe don't look down your nose at mechanical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess everybody looks for someone to look down on.
Yeah.
So Bernard is keeping himself busy. Lucas Kyle, played by Avinash, who apparently hasn't been given clean clothing or access to a shower, fills Bernard in on his efforts to crack the code in the love letter from former Rebellion head of IT, Salvador Quinn, to his wife. The letter Meadows first told Bernard about, which was one of the only things Lucas could recover from the hard drive that Bernard smashed. So Lucas has been building increasingly complex programs to run increasingly complex codes, shifting letters around to see if any of these mutations reveal legible words. Bernard tells him he's been reinventing something called a Caesar shift and more beyond that. And then he lets him get back to it. So I guess we're going to find out next week how Bernard knows all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the most interesting things they're setting up this season is just how much does the head of IT know? Because Bernard seems to have like a not only a very wide span of knowledge, but quite a deep span of knowledge, certainly much deeper than anybody else in the silo we've come across. And that applies, we'll see it at the end, but that applies to Solo as well. You know, as a former shadow of IT, he's a, you know, he was talking about like celestial positioning earlier in the season. Right.
But is Solo a former shadow of IT? Because it turns out he was impersonating
that. Yeah, one. That's the interesting question. But he certainly seems to have like the kind
of
knowledge.
He has access to that bunker. He's in that bunker. Yeah.
Yeah, he seems to have access to the kind of knowledge that only the head of IT seems to have.
Right. Yeah. Well, while Lucas works, Bernard stops by Camille's, Alexandria Riley's desk out in the IT open office area, and loudly, in front of her colleagues, he asks her menacingly about her actions last episode, rescuing Knox and Shirley from the mob, after which they disappeared. She says she was just answering the call for former raiders to step up and help out with the unrest in the silo and following the pact by preventing vigilante justice, and that she notified Judicial of where she stashed the pair for them to come pick them up. She says she waited on the stairs for an extraction team to come, but one never arrived. Well, first of all, I don't think she did wait on the stairs, but I think she knew one was not coming.
Yeah, she didn't. She certainly didn't ask for one, put it that way.
Well, I mean, maybe off screen, who knows, but yeah, Camille said she was told unofficially that justice needed to come from the citizens of the silo, and that's against the pact, though apparently it's not against the order, but Camille, of course, doesn't even know the order exists. So Bernard gives her his iciest smile and asks how her husband, who was the one who sent the mob after Knox and Shirley, reacted when she told him what she'd done. She said he understood, being the judge now, and Bernard obviously completely believed this story.
Yeah, like Bernard's not having any of it. And that smile Tim Robbins gives her, that is the evilest grin I think I've ever seen. What's the expression? It's like the sun shining off the brass plate of a coffin. It's just, yeah, it's just the most evil smile. And like, this is the thing. I think Bernard knows exactly who Camille is, even if he doesn't know everything she's done. But he also knows that if he tries to get rid of her, if he tries to move her, if he tries to do anything to her, that he's going to make a blood enemy out of Sims, and he probably can't afford for that to happen at the moment.
Well, but I feel like this gives him a tool to play the Simses against each other. Because, I mean, first of all, there's no way that Robert doesn't find out about all this, right? Like, how do you think Sims is going to react when he finds out the stuff his wife's been up to behind his back?
I don't know. I think it'd be very hard to split the Simses. They seem a very committed couple to each other. And, I mean, that's almost, from Robert's point of view, that's almost his redeeming feature, is that he loves his wife and he loves his child. So I don't get me wrong, I don't think Robert Sims will be happy when he finds out what Camille Sims has been doing, but I don't think it's going to change how they behave towards each other.
Okay, yeah, I hope not. But we get a glimpse of Robert a few scenes later, sitting at his desk and playing with his pen, and he's looking really bored at his new job. Back to the new game that I brought up the other week. Buddy cop, conspirator, murder. So who's your buddy cop partner? Who are you conspiring with, and who do you murder? Mr. Okay. Sims, Mrs. Sims, Bernard.
I am murdering Bernard.
Okay.
Because he killed Mary Meadows and I want justice, damn it.
Yeah.
I am not I'm conspiring with Robert, because I'm fairly certain I'd be the smarter of the two conspirators. Like, I'm not conspiring with Camille. She's smarter than I am. She'd be able to play me. So, and I guess I'd buddy up with Camille in that case.
All right. I'm conspiring with Oh, I don't know if I want to buddy up with Camille or conspire with her. I guess I want to conspire with her because I do think she's the smartest of three. And at least in, like, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah, but she'd throw you under the bus in half a second.
Yeah, but so would Bernard. So I'm offing him. Oh, but I don't. Yeah, I guess we talked about it before with Roberts. Like, he would at least be good muscle for our buddy cop duo. You know?
That's true.
We would have complementary talents. So that's, I think, true. That would be good.
Yeah. And also, he's got the big leather trench coat that just goes along with being a cop. With being a cop.
Sure. So if we get caught out in the rain. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
All right, so Bernard goes to see Judge Meadows' body laid out in the morgue, and Bernard laments that there's been 140 years of stability since the last rebellion, and now it's all going south under his watch. He says he's made the calculations, he's planned for everything, but then events forced him to do something he really didn't want to do, to kill maybe his only real friend. Now he cries over her corpse about how sorry he is. So, yeah, Business School 101 plan for unexpected events, Bernard. But yeah, events, quote unquote, forced me. Okay. How this is an emotionally affecting scene. I feel like Robbins is prepping his Emmy reel. But how sorry are you feeling for Bernard?
I'm not. I mean, this is the thing. I'm sort of sitting there going, oh, poor Bernard. This is awful. And going, no. Wait. You're the one that killed her.
Yeah.
You're the one that killed her.
Yep. Bernard asked, he asked her body, if their roles were switched, would she have done the same? What do you think?
No.
I don't think so either.
No, never.
No.
Also, I am always really impressed by actors playing corpses. Because that must be so hard.
I don't know. Maybe it's a cast.
Perfectly still.
Maybe it's a well, I don't know if they would do a full body cast for that, but I don't know.
No, it seems like too short a scene for that. But if it is,
let's just say her body, because he picks up her hand and like buries his face in it. She didn't seem to have rigor mortis.
No. So yeah, it's a really affecting scene. And you say plan for, you know, Business School 101, plan for unexpected events, but there is only so far you can go with that. And this is the problem with Bernard. Bernard is intelligent, but to quote Spock from Wrath of Khan, he tends to think in two dimensions. Like, he's bounded in by what is in the order.
Yeah.
And he can't think outside of that. And that's going to be his downfall, I suspect.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. All right, well, we're going to get back to the brewing rebellion, but now is probably a good time to take a quick break. Be right back.
It can get lonely climbing Mount McKinley, so to entertain myself, I go to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, I can play hundreds of online casino-style games for free, like online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Plus, I get a daily login bonus. It's just too bad that up here, I don't have anyone to share my excitement with. Woohoo!
Live the Chumba life anytime, anywhere. Play for free now at ChumbaCasino.com. VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
All right. So now we've got Diego versus the Down Deep. Knox, Shirley, and Teddy confer about the situation with their food supply being cut off again. But at least for the moment, the people around them in the cafeteria are eating happily. Shirley proposes that they find a way to push the barricade up 10 levels to 120, which would put it above the lower farms, giving them their own food supply. And yeah, that's obviously easier said than done, but we'll get to that. But as this is going on, Walker is in her workshop thinking about Carla, remembering their last kiss when Hank and Billings bang on the door. Martha asks if they're going to arrest her, but they just want to ask her about what happened with Knox and Shirley. But Walker says she won't talk to them until they find out what happened to Carla. So yeah, poor Martha. This is where I'm going to ask you to kill your darlings. If you could save both members of one and only one couple in the silo this season, which couple would you choose?
I'm glad you said this season, because if you'd said overall, it would have been a really easy answer. It would have been Holston and Allison, and none of this would have started. so, I'm going to go with Shirley and Knox for the simple reason that I'm really interested to see where this relationship goes. Like Martha and Carla, I think, you know, they've had, you know, I think they've had quite a, I think their relationship kind of ran its distance. We still don't know kind of how or why that happened. Mm-hmm. And they were sort of moving, maybe moving back towards getting back together again. But I'll just be honest, I love the idea of Shirley and Knox as a couple. It just works.
They're cute together, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think I would not have said this before this episode, but now I'm going to say the Billingses.
Good call.
Yeah, they won me over and made me glad that she went down there with whatever's going to kick off, that she's at least on the same team as him, which is different from the books, by the way. So speaking of teams, Knox leads a team in makeshift armor with makeshift weapons to the barricade, and the raiders call up to Amundsen to ask for guns to keep them at bay. Amundsen is too busy quietly freaking out to pay attention to Diego Lucky-Lou, who's just gotten a message from his aunt on level 135. She's warning them that Knox and his gang are just a distraction because there's another team headed somewhere else down there with a special saw that can cut through concrete. With this machine, they can cut their way up through the floor.
I've got to say, you know, ignoring Diego, it's not a good move, but I can see why he did it. For the first time in his life, the guy has got something useful to say and no one's going to listen.
See, he's not Diego Obvious anymore.
Yeah. I've got to say,
I don't... Diego Ambitious.
Yeah, I don't think Amundsen's audition to be head of the Judicial Raiders is going particularly well. I mean, bless him, the guy is just not that bright.
He thinks you can plug a stapler into a computer. I'm exaggerating, but not really.
Yeah, but pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's just like, yeah. It's just like, wait. They've got a device that can cut through concrete?
Yeah.
I wonder how they're going to use it.
Maybe cut through some concrete.
It's like when he turns up at the barricade. I know what drilling sounds like. Well, why don't you go and try and investigate where they're drilling to? Why are you just standing there?
There's a barricade. What can they do?
Why are you just standing there?
Yeah. So the aunt on 135, I don't think she poisoned the food, but I think it's interesting that we see like different ways that people can be quote unquote traitors to the down deep, you know?
Yes.
I think she's probably just a woman who's scared and, you know, telling her nephew like, things are getting bad down here.
Yeah, exactly.
We're reminded again that the cameras below 120 are out, so they're relying on listeners down there. But it sounds like his aunt is not actually an official listener.
Like you say, she just seems to be telling him what's going on, basically.
Right. Yeah. And Diego Lucky-Lou decides he'll take matters into his own hands since he can't get Amundsen to listen. He asks Sims to meet him and tells him about the message from his aunt, and that Amundsen is ignoring him and Bernard is nowhere to be found. So Sims goes looking for Bernard and is very unpleasantly surprised to find Lucas in his office instead, and not in the mines where Sims reminds him he's supposed to be. Lucas stammers out that Mayor Holland needed his help with programming stuff, but he doesn't know where he is, and Sims storms off. Yeah, I feel like this again emphasizes how Sims never really had a shot at the shadow job, because he wouldn't know the first thing about coding, for one. And I'm not saying that's a requirement, but that's what makes Bernard respect you.
Exactly. I also like Bernard, you know, was not going to take him into his confidence that he was using Lucas Kyle as a, you know, as a source of information as well.
Right. Right.
But I do just love the way Common plays this when he just bursts through the door. What the hell are you doing here?
He's already upset, and then he's like, what is this unexpected twist?
Yeah. What?
Thought we got rid of you.
And then I haven't got time for this nonsense, and I'm stalking off with you. Also, Common can stalk like nobody's business.
Yeah.
Like, that guy, he's got like the full sort of shoulder hunched, head forward, I'm a man on a mission kind of thing.
So as he stalks out, he sees his wife, you know, working in the bullpen, and he shoots her a look, and she's like, whoa, and gets up and goes to follow him to talk to him. Do you think she thought for a minute that he'd figured out what she had done, or Bernard had told him about her going behind his back with stuff?
Yeah, that hadn't occurred to me, but yeah, maybe.
But apparently not. He just wants to talk to her about what he's learned from Diego, because Sims is apparently the more honest partner of the two. Camille, of course, sees this as an opportunity to manipulate her husband's way back into power. She says, there's nothing wrong with letting people suffer their own mistakes. And Sims corrects, as long as the mistakes don't endanger everyone else. So do you think Sims cares about the greater good in the same way that Bernard does?
Well, no, because Sims then adds, including Elsa.
Good point.
No, I think he cares primarily about the family, Sims.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. And yeah, I feel like she's playing a game when she says to him, you can't do anything. You're a judge now. And but then he plays it right back at her this time. He says, I know. Besides, I was never a raider. So next time we see her, she's like, a raider gear.
Like, the Sims marriage is an interesting one.
Hmm.
But I don't think they'd ever turn on each other.
Yeah. I agree. All right, so meanwhile, Knox gets ready for the big push. He continues to distract the raiders at the barricade while Shirley and co. are indeed cutting chunks out of the floors and back rooms to make their way up the silo past the barricade. And another group anchors a spool of cable into the steps and then runs that cable up to the barricade. Shirley's group sneaks out of a supply room on a floor above 130. Just as they're making their move, Camille runs down in raider gear to, on her husband's behest, warn Amundsen about the ambush that's coming. But the ambush is already here. And really, Shirley's group is just distracting Amundsen's team so that the group on the stairs can hook that cable onto the barricade and pull it down. With Shirley's group across the stairs on his level and the other group coming up through the now-defunct barricade, Amundsen realizes they're hugely outnumbered and he orders his team to fall back further up the stairs. Shirley and Knox and company chase the raiders up to level 120. And then there's a standoff. Knox and Amundsen parley and come to a truce. They throw up a new barricade there. They manage to avoid violence, but now the Down Deepers have gained 10 levels, including a farm. They can't starve them out anymore. So were you surprised by any of these maneuvers?
No, I mean, I don't know about you, but I could see this coming a mile off.
Okay.
And it's like, I was getting annoyed with Amundsen, actually. It's like, they're drilling, like, they're clearly trying to get past you. Do something. Don't just stand there, man.
Yeah, I know what drilling sounds like, Derek, who's, by the way, Fahad Shaft. So I feel like we have a new Derek obvious in the making. We're going to see more of Derek.
Yes, but Amundsen, you know what drilling sounds like. And then you just proceed to do nothing about that fact. You do nothing with that information. Also, I think Shirley Knox's plan, and it is mostly Shirley's plan actually, is quite interesting because they're just reacting to what Bernard's doing. They're not trying to take over the silo. They're not trying to pop the lid in the same way that the people in Silo 17 were. They just want a better it seems to me that their plan is just to get a better negotiating hand. For talking to Bernard and the people in the up top. I don't think they're looking to like take over the silo or like depose Bernard. They just want a decent position to negotiate from.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and just to, you know, be blocked from them using that starving tactic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very nice of Amundsen, though, to stop exactly on 120, Shirley's target level.
Yeah, exactly at 120. But also, like, how fun must this scene have been to film? And Remy Miller, Shirley in particular, looks like she's having the time of her life.
Yeah.
Filming this scene.
I noticed there was that interview that I shared with you recently between Bernard and with Tim Robbins and Common. Being interviewed. I think it was for Collider or something. And yeah. And they asked Tim Robbins who he really admired in the cast, and he said Remy Milner. I was like, oh, really? I didn't expect that, because they don't really do many scenes together.
But no, I don't think they've done any scenes together, actually.
Yeah. Well, yet. Maybe we'll see. Yeah. Maybe they will later. I mean, yeah, they at the judicial, of course.
Yes.
When the frame job.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Bernard is obviously not very happy with Amundsen about this development, and he chews him out in front of all of the watchers, with Diego Looky Lou piping up next to him to help him make his point. Do we think, is it Diego ambitious? Is he angling for a better position?
I'm sorry, but Diego Obvious, head of the Judicial Raiders, I'm sorry, that would be the point at which the show jumped the shark, I'm afraid.
No, come on, I think he's better suited for the job than Amundsen.
I mean, I'm sorry, Amundsen is just thick as mint. It's just... And also, I like Bernard going, what's on 122? Come on, somebody, without looking at a map, what's on
122? The farm.
He goes, really head teacher all of a sudden.
And Diego's like, oh, there's a farm. Ooh, I know this one.
I know, me, pick I know.
Pick me. So... Now we are getting deep into the disillusionment of Billings. Billings shows up at Martha's again, saying he missed the battle because he was finding out what happened to Carla. Hanks checked with every deputy station and no Carla to be found. Billings thinks she might be in judicial seclusion. Martha is worried that with Carla's health issues, this will kill her. Billings says he'll try to clear her name, but he needs to know what happened with Judge Meadows. Yeah, okay. Judicial seclusion, that means she's been gagged and bagged, or at least that's the working theory at the moment. I'm going to reapply my clown makeup and ask, do we think we'll see Carla and Danny team up to break out of gag and bag land?
Maybe, but like Walker was pointing out, Carla's not exactly in the best of health. And also, I imagine that they're not being held together. I imagine that when you're in judicial seclusion, you're on your own.
But what are they doing with Danny? Maybe he'll help Carla. All right. So Shirley and Knox flirt some more by talking to each other over some homemade booze in the control room, which leads to a lot of making out until Paul barges in. And Martha's told their side of the story about them being framed for murder, and Billings asks if they'll swear to that on the pact, which of course they will. So Billings radios Bernard and tells him he has the fugitives, but he won't tell him where they are until he can open a full investigation into Meadows' death. Bernard tells the watchers to shut off radio communication and then says to himself, fuck me, I just lost the sheriff. Knox and Shirley are grateful to Billings, whose disillusionment is now complete. He says he stands with none of them, up top or down deep. He stands with the law. And he strides out like a self-anointed saint. Are you surprised, first of all, to see Billings on the side of the barrier as things heat up? You know, Mr. Follow the Rules. What do you think the turning point for him was?
I kind of did a little fist pump, during this scene. This is who I thought Billings was. You know, a genuinely just man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting character, but it's also somebody to fear. I get like Stannis Baratheon vibes a little bit now from Billings. You know, he's iron. He'll break before he'll bend.
Mm.
And this is the thing. Genuinely just people are... in some ways good and in some ways necessary, but you also need to be balanced by that kind of pragmatism. You know, what's good for the silo, what's going to help 10,000 people survive. And like, I think Billings is so boxed into his vision of justice. I worry that it's going to get in the way of actually doing the right thing as opposed to the just thing.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think the turning point was for him to get to the point where he is now?
I don't think there was a turning point particularly. I think it's just more as he's learned more about how the silo actually works. His commitment to the pact has been there from day one. It's just he's found out that other people are less committed to it than he is.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So what do you think that Knox and Shirley think of him right now? They exchange looks after he leaves. What do you think that means?
Well, it's like, yeah, Well, for the moment, he lets go. But if it turns out the pact, in the end, tells him to send us outside to Cleeton, he's going to do that as well. So,
Yeah.
And also, he did kind of walk in on us making out. So,
I mean, he's just like, whatever. He doesn't know that it's even new for them.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do love how the three of them, like the two of them and Martha, never for a second seemed worried that Billings was actually going to arrest them. Like all of them, like he just walks in. They're all like, you're going to arrest me? He's like, nah.
Surely in Knox's point of view, I'm pretty sure that they could take Billings if he tried to arrest them.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they want to escalate, you know, attacking the sheriff, but yeah.
Yeah.
I do think it's very cute that Billings thinks that everybody else holds the pact as sacredly as he does.
Well, this is the thing. He doesn't now. He used to.
No, but he does hold the pact sacredly. It's the leadership that he...
Yeah, exactly.
Because even in this scene, he's like, do you swear that this is true? Will you swear it on the pact? And, you know, a lot of people will be like, yeah, sure, I'll swear whatever that bundle of papers. I am very glad, though, that Kathleen and Dr. Nichols are down there because I don't know what's going to happen up top.
Well, they could certainly do with a good doctor.
Mm-hmm. For sure, especially since the other one, what's his name?
Felon that skipped town.
Yeah. Is it Felon? But with a PH?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's Felon.
As in Felon, as in, you know.
Yeah, as in criminal, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But with a PH. Anyway.
Yeah.
So over dinner in the cafeteria, Kathleen tells Paul he did a very brave thing today. Stupid, he counters, worried he'll lose his job. He's not as sure as Kathleen that it was actually the right thing to do. As he ponders in silence, Kathleen asks him when he last took the herbs he uses to manage his syndrome symptoms. And he admits it's been days, and she points out how steady his hands are. Seems the syndrome might have been psychosomatic after all. So, yeah what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it looks like this. It looks like the syndrome is at least in part psychosomatic. And also, they're eating a very nice salad and what looked very appetizing corn on the cob as well.
There's 122 farms now.
Yeah, but yeah. So is the syndrome even a thing? You know, is there any sort of physical reality to it? I think that's an interesting question.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what made it stop. Did he stop being exposed to something in particular because he's been down there for days? Or is it just like an emotional state because now he's kind of decided who he is better? Like he's
possibly
feeling more sure of himself?
Or it could just possibly be that it's in remission. We don't know enough about what the syndrome is or how it works.
We do not. This is a excellent point. All right. This is an excellent place to take our second pause. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the biggest events that wrap up the end of the episode. Just a second. So we're to that moment of shadowing, that foreshadowed moment. Huh?
Hey.
So Bernard checks back in with Lucas, who updates him on the increasingly complicated program he's building to decode the Salvador Quinn letter. And he's getting glimpses of words now, but he hasn't gone far enough. Bernard realizes that Lucas could work faster if he had access to the same knowledge that Bernard has. But the only other person who would be allowed to have access to that information is Bernard's shadow. So Bernard tells Lucas he has to see the legacy, and he swears him in on the spot. So what, you said you didn't see it coming.
No, like, not only did I not see it coming, but like you say, if you'd given me 100 guesses, I wouldn't have guessed that.
But how do you feel about it?
I mean, this is the thing, when it happened, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. So it was a good twist. It wasn't like it didn't make sense or it sort of threw me out of the episode. It did make sense. I mean, Lucas isn't really given time to consider whether he wants to be Bernard's shadow or whether he wants that kind of knowledge. And also, like, Lucas's defining character trait is curiosity. And like, if being Bernard's shadow means he gets to know a load of stuff, I think that's a pretty good bargain from his point of view.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to him, it doesn't seem like a downside, I'm sure, because the alternative is what, the mines?
Yeah, but like, you're gonna be a keeper of secrets, and not all of them are gonna be pleasant.
But he doesn't necessarily know that part. Yeah, yet. Yeah.
It reminded me of that bit from Revenge of the Sith, where Anakin and Palpatine are at the opera. Mm-hmm. Being a shadow is a pathway to many abilities, some of which are considered to be unnatural.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to contrast the conversations that Bernard was having with Lucas here with the ones Lucas was having with Meadows. Because it was funny, in the one with Meadows, like, Lucas was looking at Meadows, who's giving him this information, like, with this puppy dogish look on his face of excitement. And he's like, is there other worlds out there? And she's like, shut it down. But in this case, like, Lucas is just explaining to Bernard, who he's obviously a bit afraid of because, you know, he holds his life in his hands, basically. And he's explaining, but Bernard, the way he's looking back at Lucas, like, you can see him starting to get, like, that excitement. Like, you know, with Meadows, it's a conversation about the nature of the universe. With Bernard, it's going to be about coding, and that's what gets him to really respect someone's brain.
Yeah.
He looks, like, almost giddy as he's talking to Lucas in this scene.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is the thing from Bernard's point of view. It's so rare to come across somebody in the silo with that level of curiosity and with that level of being able to think outside the box, for want of a better term.
Yeah. It is interesting that there are certain similarities between Lucas and Meadows in that way. And Bernard was, well, we know he was drawn to Meadows, and it seems now that he's, you know, he's drawn to Lucas in some way. And it makes me wonder if this is a case of him admiring something that he doesn't have, you know, that extra thinking outside the boxness, but then also wanting to control it. And that's, you know, gonna always go awry, right?
Yeah. And what do we think? Well, I, if you can't answer this question, I understand. But what do we think the legacy is?
What do you think the legacy is? They've teased it twice now. And the last time they teased it, to remind people, was Bernard asked Meadows, when he pulled out the VR headset, he asked her if she had ever used it when she, quote unquote, sat with the legacy.
I'm wondering, is it that screen thing that Bernard was looking at, the camera footage from Juliet's helmet, that kind of whirly swirly screen thing in the bunker? Is it some kind of advanced computer technology from the before times?
Okay. That's a thing to wonder, yeah. Okay. I can't say. Yeah. I have talked about this in, this was a topic of the spoiler cast in the first spoiler cast episode this season. So anyone who has access to that, we talk about the legacy in depth there. Yeah. And actually all the time since. but do you think this means we'll get a tour of the secrets of the bunker next week?
I hope so. I really hope so. And also, like, I'd like to see Lucas have a moment of doubt, or at least, like, reflection about what he's just done. Because, like, Bernard did it so quickly, and, like, like you say, Lucas is so afraid of Bernard, that he didn't really have a chance to think through what he was doing.
I mean, he looks confused, you know? Yeah. But also maybe relieved. He's like, oh, yeah, that sounds, like, better than the alternative. And maybe...
Yeah, because...
I hope he gets a bed now and a shower, because he looks real tired.
Yeah, he looks really tired, and he looks, like you say, he looks like he's desperate need of a shower and a change of clothes.
So then we get this emotional scene that, this was the one that really moved me, was co-parenting moments. Since he's in the down deep, Dr. Nichols swings by to see Martha, the woman who basically raised his daughter, and Pete's heard about the tape swap that led to Juliet's big walk and wants to thank her for that as well. Martha says she doesn't think that Juliet's still alive. How could she be from their perspective? But she knew Juliet didn't want people she loved to see her die. So yeah, very nice to see these two together.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
All right, I've got a new game. new game is parent, teacher, enemy. So which of these three characters I'm about to name would you want as a parent, which would you want as your teacher, and which would be your enemy? And it's Martha, Carla, and Pete.
See, the thing is, I'm not at all mechanical. Mm-hmm. So I think having Martha as a teacher would be wasted on me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really, like, I didn't do very well at biology in school, so probably having Daddy Dr. Nichols as a teacher would be wasted on me. So by process of elimination, I'm going to go with Carla as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Martha as a parent.
Okay.
And then by default, I'm going to go with Dr.
I knew you wanted to kill him.
I don't want to kill him. Like,
enemy now.
well, this is the thing. I think having Dr. Nichols as an enemy, you're fairly safe. He's not going to do anything. He's a decent guy.
Hmm. Yeah.
Although
okay.
he is a doctor, so he could poison me.
Yeah. So I actually wanted Martha or Pete as my teacher for the opposite reason that they could teach me things I don't already know. So I guess the question is, I guess in the silo situation, I'm going to go for, medicine and mechanical are both extremely useful skills. I'm soft. I'm going to go for Pete. He's upstairs. as my parent. Yeah, I'm going to go with Martha as a parent because we got the tough love, but she really cares. And, she really will come through with for you in a pinch, even if it involves suddenly miraculously curing herself of agoraphobia. So sorry, Carla. We're enemies now.
But I mean, she's head of supply. She could,
yeah,
yeah. She could do some nasty stuff. She could do some nasty stuff to you.
I'd have Martha speak on my behalf.
Okay, yeah, that's not fair.
I'm like the stepchild. All right, so we only got one scene, one short scene in Silo 17 this week. But honestly, I was fine with that because it was so much going on the rest of the time. Did that bother you?
No, not at all.
I'm sure there's going to be people upset about not seeing enough Juliet.
And actually, this scene throws up a whole variety of really interesting questions.
Yeah, yeah. Now it's a doozy of a scene. So we end the episode with just a moment in Silo 17 where Juliet wakes up in a bedroom as Solo is cooking another soup for her. He tells her he's given her antibiotics for her arm, and they seem to be working, though she still looks rough. However, he's hidden the suit she's making to go outside until she helps him fix the pump 7 levels underwater to prevent the water from rising any further in his silo. Though she basically calls him selfish, saying he's putting the 10,000 people of her own silo at risk. First of all, he made the antibiotics himself in that kitchen, I have to ask.
Yes.
How did he make them? Yeah.
Yeah, and like, how does he have the knowledge to do that? That is not an easy thing. That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. He has a lot of random knowledge.
He has a lot of random knowledge. And like, even if he isn't Solo, even if he isn't who he claims to be, with that level of knowledge.
Shadow of the head of IT, yeah.
Yeah. Either he actually was the shadow of IT, or he has access to the legacy in Silo 17. And this sort of reinforces my idea that the legacy might be some kind of supercomputer from the before times, because maybe you can just like look up how to make antibiotics. You know,
so what do you think's in the drawers in the bunker?
I don't know. Is that a clue that I should be paying
I'm just asking more
attention to the drawers?
I'm just asking, what do you think is in the drawers? What else do you think is in the bunker?
I don't know. I think you're trying to feed me clues here now.
No. this show's given you more clues than I could ever give you.
I don't know. I will pay
you. But you
more
don't know. Yeah. Because I have to say, this show is mixing it up versus the book. It's not, the legacy is definitely a thing in the book, but the nature of the legacy, I think, is going to prove to be slightly different in the show.
Okay. Well, I because at the moment, I think the legacy is like the silo. Have you ever read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Yes.
I think the Legacy is like the silo's version of Deep Thought. Like the supercomputer that they build to work out the meaning of life, the universe, and everything.
Okay. All right. Well, checking in, where is Solo on the Simsnard scale now?
This is the thing. Juliet calls him selfish, but like, if she doesn't help, he is going to drown in 10 months, 13 months. I'm going to go with a 5.
Okay.
What do you think?
So he's drifted more toward the middle for you again?
Yeah, he's drifted more towards the middle.
Yeah, he is like a bit more aggressive in this way than in the books, but I guess this is all probably part of having to speed up the plot of a lot of things, you know? So they have to give him a more aggressive personality to move the plot forward faster, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I mean, although it feels like breakneck speed in the books too.
And I mean, also from his point of view, he's running out of time. Like if Juliet leaves, he's going to be dead in 10 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like I said before, the flooding in the books is not nearly up that high either.
Yeah.
It's much further down. Yeah.
Oh, it's not. So maybe it's not a question of giving him a more aggressive personality. It's just a question of a worse set
more desperation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts on the episode?
Well, like I say, if they kill Shroxy, either one of Shirley or Nox, there's going to be such a review on Rotten Tomatoes. I know not what it will be, but it will be the terror of the review boards.
Okay.
I just want one couple to get out alive, goddammit.
Maybe it'll be the Billingses.
Yeah.
But where? Where are they going?
Well, okay.
Just out of the season, you mean?
Yeah, to survive the season. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Other than one couple surviving, what do you hope happens in the next episode?
I want to see the Legacy. I don't want this like hanging till episode 10.
Yeah.
I want Lucas to have like a moment, to have a bit of an existential crisis of what have I done? I've signed up to be Bernard.
Well, Shannon. He has to first learn more about what he's done because he has no idea what all Bernard knows.
And I want the family Sims to sit down and have a family meeting and work out what page they're on. Because I think they're overdue for, you know, a free and frank exchange of views at this point.
How about
you? What do you want to see?
I hope that the episode just like straight up opens with like, okay, Lucas, you're my shadow. Now let's go in the bunker and let me show you everything and tell you all the things. I hope it's just like we got at the beginning of episode 3 when Solo gave Juliet the information dump. Now it's Lucas's turn to get dumped upon again, like he was last season by Juliet, I guess. I want Carla and Danny to team up and have an escape caper. Or I just want Danny to, I just stop teasing me with the Danny thing. Where is he? Why are you hiding him? Is something like, is the actor sick? Why do you keep bringing him up and then not showing him?
Well, you've already got Lucas this season. Don't get greedy.
No, come on. All the characters. You can't just dangle a character and then not deliver them. It's hard for me to say because I have a feeling I know what the next big moves are going to be, so I can't really say.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts?
Nope, you've already had my final thoughts. Right. I've got no more thoughts left to give.
No more thoughts in the head.
You have squeezed this lemon dry.
Well, we'll let you rejuice, and we'll be back here every Friday through January 17th, breaking down each episode with more mailbags in between. I think look out for the next mailbag after the holidays covering feedback on episodes 6 through 8. We also definitely want to hear your thoughts about the show and your theories, and we'll discuss and pose those to the rest of the community in these extra mailbag episodes. Please send them to woolshiftdustpodcast@gmail.com. You'll find that link in the show notes. Also, do join the conversation on Discord. We've got a dedicated forum with separate chats per episode and a book spoiler discussion as well. Book spoilers are also welcome in the feedback. But then just please send that feedback to me. Don't tag Luke or anything. And that feedback will be discussed in the spoiler cast episodes. And again, this week's spoiler cast discussion is The Wool Rebellion, aka the cruel plot twists the books tell us are coming at the end of this season, and how the show changes are likely to play into that. Supercast and Patreon subscribers have access to all of these spoiler casts, plus breakdowns of the Silo books and short stories, and season one spoilery rewatch, and extra interviews with Hugh Howey with full book spoilers. And I want to welcome new Silizens, Craig B., Brady P., Thunder, and Chris B. Thank you so, so much. You also help make this public podcast possible. See you on the next spoiler cast. But if you're not interested in, there are new season pass options that allow you to just get those things that I described, the Silo specific things, for a one-time fee. You have a few different options there. But subscribers who do a monthly or annual subscription on Supercast or Patreon get all access to all that, plus additional episodes that include extra seasonal episodes like the Christmas Carol novella deep dive with extra short story audio drama that Luke and I just released, and not to mention additional Hugh Howey book and short story breakdowns and Doom book breakdowns coming up after Silo, plus there'll be more. Abby and I are going to do more Hugh Howey short stories from the machine learning book as well there. So anyway, if you're interested in any of that, you can explore the links in the show notes for more information. If you're not interested in any of that, then we just really want to thank you for listening. And if you feel like you got something out of it, then please do pass it on to anyone else who might be interested. Leave a positive review, all these things. Again, I always say this, they really, really do help. And also do check out the Lorehounds feed, where David is leading weekly breakdowns of Dune Prophecy with me joining him. Lots of other stuff happening over there, like Wicked One-Shot, some comics versus content. We've got a Joker versus Madcap episode. And, of course, the Christmas content there. There's a Netflix Christmas goodness. We talked about Hot Frosty, and we talked about Our Little Secret. Do you watch any of the Netflix Christmas stuff, Luke?
No. I've been watching so much Christmas Carol themed stuff for our
but in general,
our holiday special. I don't actually watch much Netflix content. Full stop. To be honest.
Okay, fair. All right. Do also check out the other podcasts on the platform, the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, Properly Howard, which is currently doing a Few Good Films season with film starring leads from A Few Good Men. Radioactive Ramblings is covering Red Rising, Arcane, and Ghibli movies. And Nevermind the Music is combining music and psychology to give you fresh insights into your favorite songs, or even songs that you might not be so into. You still learn things from it. And it could be said, you said you guys are planning an end of year episode?
Yeah, we did. And actually, we recorded, there was so much going on in the world that we did actually find time to record an episode. So our latest episode looks at the general election in the Irish Republic. It looks at some of Trump's cabinet picks. It looks at the very strange resignation of British Transport Secretary Louise Hay. And inspired by our Christmas Carol coverage, we each pick one historical event that we'd like to see depicted on film by Muppets.
Oh, gosh.
So I selected Watergate.
That's perfect.
Yeah, Will select, my co-host Will Cooling, selected the divorce of Prince Charles and Princess Diana.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
And my host Simon Alvey, my co-host Simon Alvey selected The Perfumo Affair with Muppets, which would have been interesting, seeing as that is a sex scandal involving British politicians. So
that's like, reminds me of, was there was a puppet sex movie? Was it something Team America?
Yeah.
Something, what's it called?
Yeah.
World Police, Team America, World Police.
Yes. Let's go. Yeah.
All right, great. Any final thoughts? Final words of wisdom or love for the listeners?
Yeah, well, thanks for all the feedback on Discord, and thank you to the many people that have followed me on Blue Sky and are as a result of the show. So just a reminder that for anybody out there that wants to, my Blue Sky handle is Luke F. Middup, all one word.
And yeah, you'll find links to both of our Blue Skies in the show notes as well, so you can find us there. All right, we'll see you next Friday for episode 7 and, of course, this week's extra spoilery spoiler cast. Until then, hope you're brushing up in your coding skills because Bernard's watching.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.